Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of KCBX and its hosts. Today on CCV, join host Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik as he speaks with Dr. Sally Hawkins of Westmont College about a new $2.4 million teacher residency grant developed in partnership with Santa Barbara Unified School District. They'll discuss how this initiative aims to reduce financial barriers, support multilingual and first-generation teacher candidates, and build a more representative educator workforce for Central Coast students. You're invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation today, Thursday, between 1 and 2 p.m. Join the conversation and call in to 805-781-3875, or you can email your questions to voices at kcbx.org. Now let's join Mario and his guests. Over to you, Mario.
Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. My name is Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today, we're talking about the future of the teaching profession and a new partnership between Westmont College and the Santa Barbara Unified School District. Together, they're launching a teacher residency program supported by a $2.4 million grant that's going to help future educators complete a year-long classroom-based pathway into teaching with mentorship, graduate coursework, and financial support. This program includes stipends for teacher candidates and is designed to reduce barriers for local teachers in training, including multilingual and first-generation college students. The program responds to statewide and local needs, with many districts facing persistent teacher shortages, especially in special education, math, science, and bilingual education. Joining me for today's show is Dr. Sally Hawkins, Associate Assistant Professor of Education at Westmont College. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
To join in and ask questions of our guests, you can call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices at kcbx.org. So again, thanks for joining us and welcome to Central Coast Voices. Dr. Hawkins, would you mind sharing a little bit about your background and how you got into the field of education?
Well, education was really a second career for me. I wanted to be a teacher. I had that still small voice, that inkling, but there were, I think there were financial barriers for me, and I felt drawn to the private sector at first. And so it was when I had my little boy and I followed him in to school, and I like to tell friends I never left after that.
I hear that. It feels like parenthood is just a constant education sometimes.
That's right. That's right.
I wonder what continues to motivate your work in the field of education and for future educators?
I think it's constantly challenging and constantly changing. And I feel like there are so many demands placed on today's teachers that I'm just motivated to come alongside and help in any way I can, being a teacher myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I also thinking about your research and the work that you do, how has this been more of a focus in terms of your research and teaching and preparing future educators?
Well, when I started out in my research, I really wanted to know how students in high achieving, that was the first environment that I was looking at. Because people say that when you start out in research, it starts out as my search. Mm-hmm. So these were issues I saw my own students and my son dealing with in the schools were the pressures, mm-hmm. the pressure to be perfect, that there was no landscape upon which they could make mistakes and learn. Everything counted. Every grade just counted so much in these young people's lives, and it causes incredible stress. So my research started wanting to know from the students themselves, what is it, if anything, that's happening in the schools that is promoting or supporting resilience? Hmm. Because in some of these environments, some students thrive and some students, many students, don't. And so I wanted to know, what's that magic thing that's happening in the schools? And what I found out, and I guess I was a little surprised by, I'm embarrassed to admit, is that it was school belonging. the students who felt like they belonged in these schools had more resilience than the students who didn't feel like they belonged there.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
In your research, do you find any markers of belonging that would encourage students to feel like they belong more than others, or any programs or other markers of belonging that would reach students who feel like they don't belong?
I think it depends on the context that the students are in. And so initially I started out in these schools that are considered by the original researcher, who Dr. Sonia Luther, who found this to be an issue, because it's quite counterintuitive that the students that seemingly look like they have it all are really struggling. And so she found this designation, created this designation called High Achieving School. So that was the context I was originally looking at. And so based on that context, belonging looked different than in other contexts. And what I also found very interesting was what we adults considered belonging wasn't necessarily what students themselves were considering belonging. And so from their point of view, I was surprised by what they said helped them feel like they belonged. Yeah. It was much more nuanced than I initially thought. It's much deeper than school climate. It's way more than a banner or a sign on the marquee that says you belong here. I thought it would be about electives. I thought it would be about policies. And really, truly, so much of it was about bias and inclusion and equity.
That's interesting. Whenever I think about belonging, I think about balloons and arches and people with signs.
And
I just sometimes I feel like even that is not enough to combat the biases.
Right. It's such a deeper. It's a word that I was familiar with, but I really didn't understand until I heard the stories themselves. I did a qualitative study. The words the students use themselves really framed my understanding.
And what kind of words did they use?
It came down to how teachers treated them. Teacher support, how teachers gave support, how teachers didn't support. And I mean, these were all very well-meaning teachers in very good schools who just might not be aware. I was a 15-year English teacher. It was very humbling for me to read the research and write about it because it made me want to go back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you. If I could have, as I'm trying to say to myself, if I could start my teaching career with the knowledge I have now, what would that look like?
And you asked what keeps me going. I guess that's what it is that I want to still help and help from what I've learned. And so teacher preparation seems to be a natural fit for that.
And when you think about an excellent teacher or a teacher who does achieve belonging in their classroom, what comes to your mind?
I think it's the things that I didn't learn initially and the things that we sometimes in teacher preparation don't think about. But it's having those teacher dispositions. Some people might say, oh, that teacher's a natural. But it's having the disposition and the self-awareness and the other awareness of these little human beings, these precious souls that are in your room, and how what they're walking in with, what they might have had to leave at home, and having that deep understanding that these are people and that we call them teacher moves. The teacher moves that we make have a profound impact on them.
Yeah. Well, can you give me an example of a teacher move?
The way I think that's where cultural responsive teaching comes from. It's mm-hmm. the way we respond to the things that come up during the day that we didn't plan for. Mm-hmm. I think every teacher that comes out of a teacher preparation program knows how to give a good lesson, knows the curriculum, knows that content. And that's where I started out, where I felt like I did well, so I can be a good teacher. Mm-hmm. I know my grammar. I know my English. I know academic English and the demands. What I didn't learn, and I truly want to help new teachers get in touch with early, is the responses, mm-hmm. The sensitivity that young people have, the risk that they take in your classroom, the need to be seen, the need to be heard. And again, I feel for teachers as well, because there are so many demands on teachers that sometimes an offhanded comment, I think of myself and just like a little joke or an offhanded comment, or there's so many things going on that the teacher's planning. But a lot of times the most healing and hurtful things that can happen in a classroom are not on the lesson plan. Yeah.
I imagine that. Yeah. I mean, when for that complexity of like the unexpected.
Yes.
I guess what – how can people understand that complexity of like what's on the lesson plan and what's not on the lesson plan? And
right.
you can't always plan for the unknown.
That's right. That's right. So, well, you asked for an example. So I can think of a hypothetical example when a teacher says, okay, everybody, take out your homework from last night and lay it out so that I can walk around and check it. And a student will not have, maybe, but there's a story there, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of feeling around that. And the way a teacher responds can make all the difference. Let's say the teacher comes by, okay, Johnny, where's your paper? And you might get no answer. You might get, oh, I forgot, or, oh, I didn't have time to do it. And there's that beautiful moment for a response. And a response could be, hey, let's just check in later and keep moving, mm-hmm. versus stopping, changing all the energy in the room. Well, looks like you're going to have to stay in over recess. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
Yeah.
Things that we don't always have time to plan for. But hopefully in our teacher preparation programs, we are talking about these things now. And I really wish when I got my California teaching credential in 2008, really wish I had been able to spend more time preparing for those moments, because I did them on the fly, mm-hmm. and then later really regretting and spending time, sleepless nights. I wish I had responded differently. Yeah.
And that's part of what those qualities that you talked about, that introspection, that like self-awareness, mm-hmm. that, you know, when we make mistakes, that there's room for us to like, it's not, we're not defined by the mistakes that we make, but teachers really are well poised to change a life. And I think we're well prepared to change lives as teachers. And
that's right.
That, it's a double-edged sword sometimes.
It is. It is. If we realize if I drove to work every day realizing how much every minute in the classroom mattered, it may have scared me if I really thought about it. But we just get into the habit, like, oh, first period, then second period, then – right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes we just kind of get focus on getting the day, the lesson done. And then the other things seem extra, but now I'm realizing the extra things really made a difference.
Yeah. It seems like the extra things might even be part of that importance.
That's
like
right.
Why teaching is important might not be what's on the lesson plan.
That's right.
But how like people learn from one another by
That's
modeling.
Right. I might get a letter from students. I do often, actually. Students are really great about reaching out to their former teachers, and they'll give a – they always start out the same. You might not remember me. Let me tell you, the teachers always remember. And they will bring up somewhere in the letter something you said, and every time I don't remember. So it just shows how important it is that maybe something – I said or did that I don't remember that I didn't think was that much of a importance stayed with them. Yeah.
I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. As we continue Central Coast Voices, our guest today is Dr. Sally Hawkins, Assistant Professor of Education at Westmont College. We've been getting to know Dr. Hawkins and hearing about the teacher preparation and the teaching profession. To join in and ask a question of our guests, you can call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices at kcbx.org. For this next section, I want to focus on the new teacher residency program created through the partnership between Westmont College and Santa Barbara Unified School District. Similar to a medical residency, teacher residents learn alongside experienced mentor teachers for at least one full school year while completing the coursework needed for a preliminary credential. And saying that out loud, I feel like, what are the differences of, how is this teacher residency model different from a more traditional teacher preparation program? And I guess this is like so many questions in one question, but it's just like, is this one of a kind or is this following another type of teacher preparation model?
It's a great question. It was my first question when I was pulled in to work on a team about this, and I didn't know anything about it. It was my first question. Well, how is this different? Are we repackaging the same thing and calling it something new? So I can't take credit for the model. Whoever did create the teacher residency model, I think it was in California, I really hand it to those people, because not only have they created a sustaining model of success, but they have made the adjustments necessary to make it sustainable and positive for everybody. So when I went through, I mentioned I got my credential in 2008, which doesn't seem that long ago, but I'm sure to many listeners that's a lifetime ago. It was a traditional student teaching preparation program, and those exist everywhere. And what that usually is time in coursework and then part-time student teaching, maybe a day or two a week, where you are observing and then you slowly take over and teach a lesson, and then you take over for a two-week period and you teach for a two-week period. And you're guided by the cooperating teacher in the classroom who's hosting you and mentoring you, and you're also guided by the college or university with support. And that has been a long ongoing model that has produced many talented, highly skilled teachers. The residency model is different in that it is a more fully immersive experience where we call them residents, just like you were saying, that medical model, where the residents start at the school from the first day. So they are considered and treated and welcomed as a co-teacher in the classroom. Their name is on the door with the mentor teacher. They are there 3 full days a week from the first day of school till the last day of school. So it is a gradual release of responsibility over a sustained amount of time where they have been researching residents through this model, and they have found that the residents not only stay in the profession the first couple of years and stay in the profession longer, but that they feel more confident in that first year because teacher attrition is real. And seeing a skilled teacher, observing a skilled teacher in a classroom doesn't give a new teacher enough preparation to do it alone every day, day in and day out. I think when people do things very well, it's an art and it looks easy.
Mm-hmm.
And then some teachers, you know, many new teachers have said, I had no idea how hard it was going to be to have my own classroom because I had such a great experience student teaching. So the residency model is to be there more often, to jump in more often, and to have that constant guidance throughout an academic year.
And what does a teacher resident typically do? Like, is it the same? Do they co-teach or share the labor when it comes to teaching the students, or how what would you say their day-to-day looks like for a teacher resident?
What I love about the model is that it is flexible. So the mentor teacher really is a coach and a guide, and there's room for that professional to make the decisions. But it starts out with sharing your classroom, sharing your planning, sharing everything so that the resident can be a part of it. So they can plan together. They can create lessons together. They spend time after the lesson talking about what worked, what would you change, you know, really giving the resident the opportunity to grow during that time, which includes making mistakes and having a safe person be there right alongside you. So it really is designed to be supportive. It's almost like we're threading layers of support around this resident because not only do they get it from the mentor in the field, they get it from the professors and adjunct professors in their courses. And then college supervisors, which at Westmont are the professors, we go into the field also and we offer that support too. So I love it because I saw it happen through an entire academic year at my former institution at St. Mary's College up in Moraga. And to watch residents go through an entire year, there wasn't a dry eye in the room when they graduated because we were all on their team as a unified, you know, we would be Team Mario, right? And we were all working together with our resident as our student. You know, and we've invested in that person. Yeah,
that's amazing. The wraparound model really sounds like they're guided, but it's not just with the teacher in the room, but there are more mentors, there are more services available to the student. Because I think that's one thing that I hadn't separated until now is that while you are a teacher resident, you're still like in practicing in your profession. So to hear that they are encouraged to seek out support from their professors and their and the college that they're getting their preparation from sounds, I think, to me that they want the teacher residents to succeed. Mm. And it's not like, what is it? It's not like there's not like a gatekeeping when
That's
it
right.
comes to becoming a teacher. It's like, we're opening the gates and we want you to be the teacher.
That's right. And I really am interested in taking what I know about school belonging and researching it for this program.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to create a pathway and welcome potentially classified employees who have had that same inkling that I recognized. I really want to be a teacher, but the hoops, there's just so many things and I don't understand them. And so that's a barrier. I moved to California from Michigan, and I just kept asking people, I really want to be a teacher in California. I just don't know how. And there are all these acronyms and all these requirements, and it really can be, it feels not intentionally, but it feels to many people exclusive. Like, well, if you don't understand, maybe that's a sign, mm-hmm. right? It's like another barrier,
yeah,
right? And so I just want people to feel like if you have that voice inside you that says, this feels like home to me, this feels what I've been called to do, that we're going to open up the ways where you can achieve your dream. Yeah.
That's incredible. And you think we need more affirming programs like that for our future teachers in our teachers in training. And I want to know, you know, what from the perspective of the partnership, what makes Santa Barbara Unified an important partner for this program?
First of all, I'm really so grateful that I'm new to the area. I moved down here a year ago from the East Bay, from St. Mary's College to Westmont. And so I really didn't know anybody. People did not know my name. And so I reached out to the assistant superintendent of HR, John Becchio, and he didn't know me. And I was talking about something that he had heard of, but it all kind of translated into a lot. That sounds like a lot of work. And his generosity of heart, he said, I want this. We have long wanted to diversify our teacher workforce. This sounds like something we want to do. And so we aligned so quickly that we were passionate about the same things.
Wonderful. Yeah. We're going to take a short break to hear from our team, and we'll be right back on Central Coast Voices. Over to you, Charlie.
Hola, I'm Maria Hinojosa. Every Thursday afternoon at 2, you can hear Latino USA on KCBX. Latino USA is a Peabody Award-winning radio journal of news and culture from a Latino-Latina perspective. It chronicles how we're living, shaping, and changing the United States of America. Tune in for in-depth reporting, candid conversations, and fascinating stories. Join me for Latino USA Thursdays from 2 to 3 on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, romance novelist Kennedy Ryan. Her stories focus on people the genre has often left out.
The black girl, the fat girl, the sick girl, the disabled girl.
She's the first black author to win the Rita, romance's highest honor. Join us.
Some people think of the labor economy as kind of a game of musical chairs.
So if one more worker is going to enter the labor market, someone else must lose a seat.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the lump of labor fallacy. We'll explain, don't worry. That's next time on Marketplace.
Ahead on our Thursday here on KCBX, it's Latino USA up at 2, Fresh Air at 3, and then the Marketplace at 4. Right now, let's return to Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Mario.
Thank you, Charlie. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Central Coast Voices. It's me, Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. Our guest today is Dr. Sally Hawkins, Assistant Professor of Education at Westmont College. To join in and ask a question of our guest, you can call 805-781-3875 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. In this next section, I want to look more closely at the equity questions behind teacher preparation. Across California, there's still a significant gap between the diversity of the student population and the diversity of the teacher workforce, including here on the Central Coast, or might say just especially here on the Central Coast. And so I'm wondering, in this residency, we talked about Santa Barbara Unified Schools, and I understand Santa Barbara Unified Schools is a highly diverse like district when it comes to the students, not just by race and ethnicity, but by socioeconomic status. And that might even be true of like our teachers in preparation or teachers in training. So one of the first questions for this is like, first for the teachers, like how do costs and financial barriers shape who's able to enter into the teacher profession?
That's absolutely true. Right. That's absolutely true. When I decided in 1989 that I was in New York and I had this wonderful job, and my friends and I went to the movies one night, 1989, I'll never forget it. And I think I walked in the theater thinking, what a life. I have such a great job. I have such a great – this is so great. And I walked out of that movie, Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams, and had this feeling of dread that any 26-year-old could feel at that time, thinking, I made a mistake. And I neglected the true voice, the calling to be an English teacher. And I'll never forget the feeling that I had at all of the wise age of 26 that it was too late. And so it wasn't until I was 40 where I had the means. I had the life experiences. I had a spouse who would support me and say, if that's what you want to do, you need to do it and we can pay for it. And I think about others who have that same desire, who didn't have somebody say, I can help you, I can do that for you. Yeah. And so that's what this residency is really about.
Amazing. And opening so many doors for not only for themselves, but for the students that are going to be benefiting from their instruction. So I want to ask, like, in terms of the students, why does it matter for students to see teachers with a wide range of backgrounds, experiences, and perspectives?
Students, I mean, research has long shown that students who can see their potential in the front of the room, if they can see the possibilities for them within their school community, then they can connect the dots and they can visualize that. And when they don't see, you know, sometimes that path doesn't materialize or it doesn't exist, or mm-hmm. they might think, I don't even know how where would I start?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. And thinking about language.
That's
even.
Right, language,
like,
right.
Like right now I have a student in my class at a college, and it's like it's a class for English speakers. Like it's not like a Spanish language class, but the student is pushing herself and as being a second language learner but like needing like Spanish instruction. So I only can imagine, like, you know, there's so many young children in Santa Barbara County that might not even be that they're monolingual Spanish, but they're monolingual Mixteco or like indigenous language like speakers. So I'm thinking, like, for teacher candidates who are multilingual or first generation or indigenous, how does that play into like strength in the classroom? And you mentioned like my search earlier, but like how do teachers in this program like realize their inner strength as like what makes them special, and you know, project that for students to see themselves?
Well, please let me know if I answered your question, because mm-hmm. there's so many great things that pop in my head when I'm hearing you talk. So we want to create, first of all, a pathway and a sense of belonging for the teacher candidates to say that you deserve to be here. You are needed here. This is a grow your own model, which means that if you grew up in this community, you have a wealth of assets that you can bring to the schools, you know. I remember reading something recently, and forgive me, I can't remember who wrote it right now, but they said something that really stuck with me, and they said, in the history of education in the United States, which really isn't all that long, even though we're celebrating 250 years, relatively speaking, that's not very long, and that the history of education in the United States had really was set up primarily for one type of student, one gender, right, one student. And the needs have obviously changed. And yet the model hasn't really changed all that much. And so this author said, at best today, students from marginalized communities are at best welcome guests in a school system that wasn't built for them. And so we want to start with the teachers and build a new school for yeah. these students.
That's spot on the nose for answering that question. Definitely, when thinking about the history of public education in the U.S., and I just came from teaching about the East L.A. blowouts in California, and students walking out because they didn't see themselves represented, and they were facing corporal punishment because of just the laws and things like that. So, just the way that public education had been shaped, I think what I'm hearing is that this program is an intervention to, it's not this program's sole responsibility to transform a system that they didn't create, but I think that this program does give the students, the future teachers, a chance to be that voice and be that intervention for students now.
That's right. This grant is less about filling positions in the near future. It's more about growing and developing a new generation of teachers to meet the needs of today's students. And that, we can't rename things and repackage things when they're the old things and expect anything new to happen. Mm-hmm. And so this truly feels innovative.
And that brings me to the culturally responsive side of things. How does culturally responsive pedagogy or the science of teaching look like in practice? When we think about this program and the residency and that they're situated in Santa Barbara Unified, why does culturally responsive teaching matter?
Well, Zaretta Hammond wrote this amazing book called Culturally Responsive Teaching in the Brain, and it was the first time that I learned about brain science and how we as teachers, how we can teach culturally responsive teaching that affects learning. So it's so much deeper than even creating a welcoming place for all students. It's that it impacts how they learn. So I think about one of the things that she defined was called being the warm demander and creating a safe space, creating an environment where students can – the adrenaline, can subside, where they can begin to feel – safe in this environment from microaggressions or from racism or from just all kinds of things that maybe a teacher, a well-meaning teacher who doesn't share that same culture might not be aware of. Mm-hmm. And they can feel safe enough to get ready to learn. But until those things are present, many students don't feel like they can learn. The way I equate it to is I grew up in Catholic school and very strict teachers, and we would get called out for things. And I remember that disassociative feeling after I would get yelled at. And I just dealt with it. And, I didn't go home and tell anybody because then I'd get in trouble again. But I just remember not being in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else looked like – the teacher looked like she had moved on. No, none of the kids were looking at me, but I still wasn't present. And so that's the closest thing I can equate to understanding it is that a student just might not be present when they feel like this classroom is not safe.
Yeah.
Or I don't know what's going to happen with this teacher. I never know what's going to happen, or I don't feel like I truly belong. I don't see how the curriculum's relevant. I don't see myself in any of these examples or the stories, things like that.
Yeah. That's a great example. And especially if we're thinking about teachers that are going into the profession and beginning their practice, I think there's like a lot of pressure to feel like you have to represent an entire community, but you may only be like a few things in the spectrum of the community.
That's right.
You can't be all of it for everyone. So in thinking about like the schools, how should schools think about representation without placing that much pressure on individual teachers?
I think just coming from the research that where I learned, I think it starts with understanding what culture really is. And the best example that someone explained to me was that, you know, fish don't see the water that they swim in, but we're affected by our culture, and we have bias. And so being aware of that, I think, is the first step. Because you're right, we can't be all things to everybody, but we can start to put together strategies to make sure, number one, that we get to know our students as people, and that we put systems into place to make sure that even if it seems like a small thing, a consistent thing would be that they feel seen, that you have something in place where you can say, I connected with Mario today.
Yeah. And I think that builds off of the what you just talked about right now. You mentioned seeing our students as people, getting to know them as people. How do those relationships between teachers and students, those bonds, support belonging and academic success? I mean, sometimes I think of it as like an invisible curriculum. at the same time, it's just like being a human. Like, you know, that sure, the teacher's here to do their job and I'm here to learn. But a lot of the impact in education comes from just like those connections, like talking after class or during class or just like a sticker.
That's right. I think it goes back to building trust and rapport with our students, so that when we do ask them to do something hard, because when we ask students to do something hard, we're really asking them to take on a risk in ways that as adults we might not, we may have forgotten, or we don't really understand in today's society how risky the world is to young people, because everything is, nothing's private anymore. And so when they take a risk, it feels very public. And so being that warm demander says, you know, I care about you. I've shown you, right? I care about you in many, many ways. And so when I ask you to do something hard, I'm not going to let you fall. Yeah. I'm going to be there. And then to show them the ultimate gift, which I think every teacher has the potential to share with their students, is to teach students and just that they can do hard things. And when they do hard things and they are successful in those hard things, that's where true confidence comes from. That's where motivation can come from. And teachers are the ones that can plant that path.
Yeah.
With students, yeah.
I agree. And truly, the one of the best outcomes from my education has been that belief in me, that I can do it, and I shouldn't be thinking about all the reasons why I landed here, but of the places that I can go to.
That's right.
I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. We're discussing Westmont College and Santa Barbara Unified School District's new teacher residency program and what it means for the future of local schools. If you recently joined us for today's Central Coast Voices and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you may. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you'll find this show and many others to choose from. You can also find this episode with all our past shows by searching Central Coast Voices wherever you get your podcasts. You can also use your smart speaker and just ask whoever it is to tune in to KCBX FM radio. To learn more, listeners can visit westmont.edu/teach. Returning to our guests, we have with us today Dr. Sally Hawkins, Assistant Professor of Education at Westmont College. And we're getting towards the last part of our show, and I want to focus on how listeners can learn more and how local communities can support future educators. Becoming a teacher isn't only an individual career decision, it's also a community investment, because local schools depend on people who know the region, understand students' lives, and are prepared to build classrooms where young people feel seen, supported, and challenged. Dr. Hawkins previously told us that it's a grow-your-own model. So, and just in the Santa Barbara County, there's so much, like, I think, synergy when it comes to growth, because there's so much grows here. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our students, and especially in Santa Barbara Unified Schools, come from families that are already, like, contributing to the growth of, like, for example, our agricultural economy. So I just wanted to say that out loud because I just keep thinking about, like, a big strawberry. but for listeners who might be curious about teaching, what kind of person should consider applying to a teacher residency program?
I think that anyone who has been in a classroom and felt like, this feels like home. This, I feel passionate. I feel alive in this environment because there's so much energy in a classroom. It's really hard to define it. Somebody would just have to see it. But if you're somebody who has worked in a classroom, been in a classroom, and just felt that energy and, like, passion, I think that's the start. And I think it's anybody who has wanted it and felt like, yeah, but there's so many things in the way, we're trying to make a way.
Yeah. And there are so many ways. And I'm thinking about just, like, in this area, in SLO, like, mm-hmm. there's – you have the community college teacher pathway route that prepares you for transfer. And then there's the, like, the 2+2 where you for students who are bound to a location but want to advance their career, that there's an invitation to another university who can help support. And then there's this way.
That's right.
That places you in a classroom.
And all those ways can work together. Mm-hmm. We are working with Santa Barbara City College and creating that articulation. We are working with the other schools in the area because we all want the same things, right? If there is somebody who feels that calling, at Westmont we see it as a calling. If you feel the call to be a teacher, we believe it's not going to go away. And so whether you respond to it at 40 like I did, because I just thought, oh, I'll outgrow that. That'll go away. It doesn't go away. And so we're all working together to help recruit those people and encourage them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about for the folks that have worked with young people, maybe a tutor or a teacher's aide or a coach or, you know, the school nurse?
Yes, that's right.
But they haven't thought of themselves as a future teacher, or they have that self-talk that's like, I can't do it right now.
I can't do it right now. So it's interesting. This first cohort, the grant provides funds for 4 cohorts. So this first one is starting in August, and then the second one cohort will start the following August and so on. It's very interesting. This first cohort is made up of classified employees at Santa Barbara Unified. And we want everybody in the community to get informed on this residency program because the people in the schools are the ones that have said to the paras, the bilingual curriculum specialists, hey, do you know about this teacher program? Do you know about this grant? You would be great at that. So that it's a community of people who are seeing the talent in the schools already and saying, here's a way. Here's a way we can do this. So every person that's reached out to us so far has said someone at Cleveland Elementary, somebody at Roosevelt, somebody at McKinley told me that I should do this. So, yeah.
That's incredible. I love how supportive these networks are.
That's right.
You know, there's the college side of it, but to have someone like support your vision for a calling that you want to answer.
That's right. They see it really goes back to the same idea about longing that these residents have already said, someone saw me. Somebody saw something in me and somebody encouraged me to do this and that we're all going to help together. I think in education everybody is so maxed out that we've worked in silos for far too long. And this partnership with Santa Barbara Unified is life-giving. It doesn't really feel like work when I work on it because I love the people that I'm working with on it. And I think that just helps our quality of life, right? I enjoy the people I'm working with. I enjoy what I do. They are enjoying very much getting to know this first round of cohorts. It's really great.
That's the dream. When it comes to colleges and school districts and community organizations, do they play a role in making teaching more accessible? I mean, I can see how colleges and school districts can play that role, but what about like community-based organizations or the nonprofit sector? Is there any way that they touch this program or help encourage teachers?
I think so. It's so new. It's not a new model in California, mm-hmm. but it is new in Santa Barbara. And I really think it's going to take on a life of its own as more people learn about it and get connected to it. Mm-hmm. There's a nonprofit organization that I'm affiliated with called Partners in Education, and they do all sorts of great work for people in the community. And they had already started something called Readers as Leaders. And there are people in the community in Santa Barbara that want to give to the schools. And it took somebody to come along and say, hey, why don't we get people working in this? So I really think it's just this connection of identifying talent and showing people that they can get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I have two twin boys, and they're both in toddler school, and they have like early intervention teams. And I just feel like those are also like people I would like to see in their classrooms in the future.
That's right.
Not just the formalized teachers, but the teachers who like are so affirming in their personal development. And I know that your class size grows over time. But
that's right.
I really wish that a lot of that model of the like having a goal and like asking those students to show up for themselves that mm-hmm. they can learn new things. Mm-hmm. That's I really want to see that happen for those who may not be in a traditional school setting.
That's right. That's right.
And for families and community members, how would you say they can best support the candidates that are going to become teachers?
I think that the community in Santa Barbara Unified can support our new residents by seeing them as co-teachers in the classroom under the guidance of an experienced mentor. So the mentors are going to be selected from the district as being, you know, having a track record of outstanding teaching. And so how great to learn, right, alongside somebody. And, yes, just to give – actually to welcome the residents into this world, into this profession. Yes.
Yeah. And looking ahead 5, maybe 10 years. What do you hope this partnership makes possible for Santa Barbara?
I really want this to sustain, you know, the funds. People always joke that, you know, we can sustain it as long as the money is there. But I really believe that we're already trying to look beyond the 4 years where we'll have the grant funds. And I think the benefit that's going to come out of all of this work is this very authentic and well-connected and well-respecting of each other's gifts is the partnership. So we're going to be saying, you know, how can Westmont and Santa Barbara Unified and UC Santa Barbara and City College, how can we all together support our schools and the students in the schools? Because like you said, I was surprised, actually, when I moved here recently, what a disparity there really is. I think I thought Santa Barbara, oh, you know, it's just
kind sunshine of
sunshine and you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. And so now that I'm here, just that we'll all work together to support these young people. That have, you know, that have needs to, you know, there is research that says that in order for a child to thrive in this highly complex world, they need at least 8 adults beyond their parents to come alongside and be mentors and coaches and all that stuff. So wouldn't it be great if our community, that we were those 8 people or created communities where these kids feel like, wow, the adults in this community really care about me and my success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And any last words for our guests or for our listeners that are on the air?
If anybody's interested in learning more about the teacher residency, we are going to be open to talk about Cohort 2, Cohort 3, Cohort 4 in the coming years. Just visit Westmont College's website, westmont.edu/teach.
Yes. Thank you so much for being on the show, Dr. Sally Hawkins.
Thank you so much.
And thank you all for joining us today. We hope you'll tune in next time for Central Coast Voices on Thursday, June 11th at 1 with host Fred Monroe and his guests from Infinite Music to discuss the power of music for young people. Central Coast Voices is co-produced by the show's hosts in collaboration with KCBX, and we depend on folks like you to continue these programs. So please donate today or become a member with your monthly donation at kcbx.org. I'm Dr. Mario Espinoza-Kulik. Thanks for joining us.